today with that, you know, that blizzard.
Oh, that blizzard thing. Oh, well, here's the report. The National Weather Service is calling for a big blizzard thing.
Yes, they are. But, you know, there's another reason why today is especially exciting.
Especially cold.
Especially cold. Okay. But the big question on everybody's lips.
Yeah, they're chapless.
And they're chapless. Right. Do you think Phil's going to come out and see a shadow?
Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right, woodchuck chuckers. It's Groundhog Day! Get up and check that hog out!
Rick, it's almost Groundhog Day.
It's almost Groundhog Day. Just
it's
a couple days away.
It is. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition on a special day on a Wednesday from the press box here on the AHL Report. I'm your host, Amy Johnson, the lead correspondent at AHL Report, and I'm joined, of course, every week by my fabulous co-host, the president and founder of Rocket Sports Media and the editor-in-chief of all of our magazines and websites, Mr. Rick Stevens.
Just barely back off the road, coming back from Utica and the All-Star festivities. And
haven't even unpacked yet. I got home yesterday. I dumped my suitcase in my bedroom, and there it still sits. So, yeah, barely back. But it was exciting, and we're going to talk about it in a bit.
Absolutely.
We have a packed show for you today, and of course had to start with, you know, I'm sorry if you haven't seen Groundhog's Day and that doesn't just make you cringe just hearing that sound of that radio broadcast on Bill Murray's alarm clock in the morning. I suggest you go out this week and you watch it, and we're going to come back to Groundhog's Day in a little bit when we get towards the end of the show in our top five. But we have a stacked show for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about, of course, kicking things off with our Rocket recap. We're going to talk about the not-so-great week that the Rocket had last week as they finished up their long January homestand. Three games at home last week, three losses at home last week yet again. So we're going to get into a little bit, just touch briefly on those games and what's happening there, what the, you know, maybe how they can turn some things around and take a look at the week ahead as they head out on the road. As Rick mentioned, we are fresh off the All-Star Classic with the AHL. We were there in Utica, New York this weekend with all of the players, but particularly the Laval Rocket representatives and Chris Terry and Matt Tarmina. So we spent a lot of time with them this weekend, spoke with them multiple times. So we'll kind of break down how the whole weekend went between the skills competition and the actual 3-on-3 tournament, along with plenty of audio clips from both of those guys as we spoke to them quite often. We'll touch on briefly on some AHL news, including we attended the State of the League address by AHL President Dave Andrews while we were in Utica. So we'll bring you some of the information that he gave in that address. And then, of course, we're going to round things out with a bit of an untraditional top five, not necessarily a top five per se, but we're just going to hit some fun facts about Groundhog Day because, honestly, it's one of those holidays that how did this become an actual holiday that people celebrate? And so it's a lot of fun, and we're going to have some fun with it as well. And I think that's it, Rick. I think that's the agenda. It's not much. I don't know how we'll fill an hour.
We usually manage to.
I think so. So we're going to kick things off, of course, with our Rocket recap. And Rick, oh, let me tell you, it was last week was not pretty for the Rocket. And as has been the case, unfortunately, most of the time through up until this point in the season, the Rocket are struggling on home ice, which isn't typical for most teams. But with this team, it happens to be the case that they're typically more successful on the road than they are at home. I believe it's something like they've only won four home games since the end of November or something around there. Don't quote me on that specifically, but there haven't been a lot of victories at Place Belle in Laval. And last week they played the Syracuse Crunch on Wednesday night and then back-to-back games against the Manitoba Moose Friday and Saturday. And they lost all three of those games, bit deflating before they head into the All-Star break, I would say.
And we spoke of it. We knew it was going to be tough, given the quality of the competition in both Syracuse and Manitoba coming in. But hope that there would be, you know, the the home ice advantage would suddenly become an advantage, and for them, and partly that they'd want to end the their pre All-Star break on a high note, and perhaps too the realization that we're getting down to 30 games left in the season, and that they're going to have to turn on, I was going to say the Jets, but the Rockets, let's say, in order to get themselves back into the playoff picture, because the Utica Comets are 12 points up, and the Comets have a game in hand at that. So it's getting to be must win time for the Laval Rocket.
Absolutely, and it. Unfortunately, last week, again, they're consistently in this position where it's not that they're playing poorly and are getting completely blown out in games. In many of these instances, what is still happening is that they're still playing pretty good hockey and they're playing pretty consistently. A lot of times at the end of the night, they have outshot their opponents. But for some reason, those shots aren't finding the back of the net. The power play hasn't been clicking like it was in the beginning of the season. There was one night over last week's games where they had 7 power play opportunities, and granted they capitalized on 2 of them, but that's 5 that went without a power play goal, which could have drastically changed the momentum and the outcome of that particular game. Discipline has been an issue. Now, granted, it doesn't seem to just be centered on the Rocket. In a lot of these games, both teams are getting penalized heavily. And so, it's a matter of, okay, so sure, things like slashing is getting called a lot more tightly this year than it has been in the past. So, there was the first game against Manitoba on Friday night, the first 4 penalties were all slashing penalties. Some were against Manitoba, some were against Laval. Then I think almost every penalty that night was a slashing penalty. So it's something players need to be aware of. If refs are going to be that sensitive in calling slashing, it's something that players have to be more aware of when they're playing. Against Manitoba, both of those games, it got very physical. It got very chippy. We had multiple game misconducts. In the Friday night game, there was some nastiness again on Saturday. And again, guys are playing with intensity. I'm sure they're also frustrated. And so those kinds of tensions can boil over on the ice as well. But the penalty kill has consistently all season long not been very good. And it's just not a situation that you want to put yourself in, especially at this time of year when every point matters. And they had 6 points up for grabs last week, and they came away with 0. And Rick, as you say, Utica is 12 points ahead with a game in hand. And when you have 3 home games, to not come up with a single point, it's just the guys in that room are going to know that that's not acceptable. And they've got to get things turned around here and turned around very quickly. Go ahead.
No, it's got to be very frustrating, as you said. They know as well as we do the situation that they find themselves in. The penalties, yes, there's been a crackdown this year, but there were 45 games into the season, so they should have adjusted by now. It's it's the inconsistency, it's the perhaps inexperience in some cases.
Perhaps
the Laval lineup, they're pretty strong on the top end, but they're getting into the bottom part of the lineup. There's some young players there. It's Anton Wakehead, Stefan LeBlanc, Jordan Boucher, Simon Bourque, Thomas Abing. There's a bit extra pressure on those players, given the situation, given where they are in the standings, but maybe a little bit more pressure being at home. We talked about their home record, you know, with the rink full and knowing the expectations of the fans, a bit more pressure, and mistakes are being made. Discipline is not there. And particularly in their own end, again, they're just giving up way too many goals. And you know, part of it, we can't ignore the fact that the parent club is struggling badly in their own end. And these two clubs do play the same system. It is the Julien system that they're playing. And that, you know, possibly has something to do with it as well. But all that put together, they just aren't playing very good hockey on their own end right now.
No, they're not. You know, and to his credit, Sylvain Lefebvre, as you mentioned, you know, both the NHL and the AHL clubs play basically Julien's system, which, you know, some people get frustrated with that, but please understand that that's also an asset to the players. When they get called up, they need to be able to fit into the NHL system right away. But to his credit, Sylvain Lefebvre on Saturday night, after being handed another two losses Wednesday and Friday, Sylvain Lefebvre took a look at his lineup and said, okay, time to shake things up a little bit. I'm going to change. He'd been running with the same lineup and the same line combinations for a number of weeks, you know, some changes here and there due to injuries or suspensions and whatnot, but generally the same. On Saturday, however, he decided to do a whole new look. Michael McCarron found himself back centering the first line again for the first time, I believe, since he was sent back down from the Canadiens. That also put Jordan Boucher, that put Adam Cracknell centering the second line, with Dan Audette on his left wing and Jordan Boucher on his right wing, which was a promotion for Boucher. Boucher has typically been on the fourth line and sometimes the third line, which put Nicky Petty centering the third line with Yannick Veilla on his left wing and Jeremy Gregoire on his right wing. And so the top three lines looked very different. The fourth line was David Brohl, Marcus Eisenschmidt, and Kyle Bond, which wasn't anything too different. Kyle Bond had been up on the second line for a little while and the third line, but not too different. But those top three lines looked very different, Rick. And, you know, it was nice to see Terry, McCarron, and Sherbach back on a line together to open the season. Those three had a very strong first couple of weeks. Unfortunately, that game ended up in a 5-2 loss, which they were pretty much into it until about halfway through the second period when things kind of started to fall apart. So even despite shaking up the lines, the result was still the same. So, you know, moving forward, does he stay with this new look line? Does he go back to what was working? You know, I can't really say, but at least he's doing what he can as a coach to try to ignite a spark somewhere on his roster.
Yeah, I think he was, you know, Michael McCarron had been put in the role of you know, a checking, kind of a shutdown role with Veilla and Gregoire and sometimes Bond, as you said. I'm not going to speak for the coach, but if we can't keep the goals out of the net, let's try and score more than they do. And so of spread the offense out. You had, as you said, McCarron, Sherbach, they're good together on and off the ice. And with Chris Terry coming back from injury, the three of them had some chemistry before, and that seemed natural to put them together. And Adam Cracknell has been, you know, a pretty potent offensive weapon since he came over from the Wolfpack, and so get that second line generating some offense as well. It seemed like a logical way to go, but with the Moose and you know, one of the top goal scoring teams in the entire league, they just had trouble again. mental mistakes and coverage mistakes and in their own end and gave up five again that night.
It's been a tough stretch for Laval. Hopefully the nice thing is, okay, so now they're on their all-star break currently. They have a number of days off for that. They reconvene this week where they will travel directly to Toronto because they head right back out on the road now once they come off of this break. So they've had a little bit of time to rest the body, rest the mind, relax a little bit, kind of recharge. And then they head out on the road, which has typically been more successful for them. Granted, they're playing some tough teams. They're starting with Toronto on Saturday. Then they go to Binghamton on Wednesday, Utica on Friday of next week, and Syracuse again on Saturday. So divisional games. This is a really important road trip for this group, not only in the points race, but it's divisional games against teams that have been doing very well. So I would imagine, Rick, this is really circled on the calendar for the team and the coaches that these are some very big must-win games.
Yeah, in the next 3 weeks, they play Utica twice. It goes without saying that they have to win both of those games. But that's not enough. I mean, those are enormous games, given that they're trying to catch Utica. But they have to pick up some points. You know, Binghamton is typically been a tough place for both the Rocket and the predecessor, the Ice Caps, to visit. It's been a tough rink. Toronto at the top of the standings. That's going to be a tough game. Syracuse plays high energy, in your face kind of game. Playing in Syracuse is always tough. They're going to have to find it within themselves to, to make a move here, because the next couple of weeks will decide whether they're going to be challenging for a playoff spot or not.
We will, of course, be bringing you all of the game updates throughout that road trip. Again, their only game this week before our next podcast on Tuesday will be against the Toronto Marlies. That's a 4 p.m. Eastern start on Saturday. And so we will bring you live game updates, of course, and have a full recap there. And then we will actually be on the road covering the team on the road for the rest of that remainder of that road trip next week, which we'll touch on more on next week's podcast. So be sure to keep it locked on at the AHL Report on Twitter and of course, AHL.report online for all of the full information on those games. We, of course, along with all of the fans, would love to see this team string some wins together. So hopefully this All-Star break was just the medicine that these guys needed to right the ship and really get things started off on the right foot. So stay tuned for more on the Rocket as they head out on the road. But Rick, speaking of the All-Star Classic, the AHL All-Star Classic, it was a fantastic weekend in Utica, New York, who played host to the All-Star events again this year. They hosted 3 years ago. And hosted again, sporting a building full of new renovations and so forth. And for all intents and purposes, from everything we could see, the fans and the players truly enjoyed themselves this past weekend.
What a great event! And Utica being one of the one of our favorite buildings to go to, the atmosphere. I always say it's an old hockey barn. It doesn't look like that anymore with all of the renovations that they did on the outside and in adding the boxes. But it hasn't lost any of that charm and that atmosphere and the tight confines, the noise and the fan enthusiasm and it was great again. It was full for the both the skills and for the the game itself, the All-Star Challenge, and fans seemed to have a great time.
They really did. They really did. And the Laval Rocket was once again this year. This is at least the third year in a row that the Montreal Canadiens AHL affiliate has had two representatives at the All-Star events. And that was Chris Terry, who was there last year as well. And Matt Tarmina, who I believe he mentioned to us that this was his fourth year in a row attending the All-Star game. This is, of course, his first time wearing a Laval Rocket sweater. We asked Matt, you know, despite this is the fourth time you've been an All-Star, but you know, what does it really mean to be selected to be an AHL All-Star? And this is what he had to say.
Well, being selected as an All-Star is always great because you know that the coaching staff and people around the league are looking at you and they notice good things that you've been doing. And it's always an honor to come here, and especially coming back here. I know they redid a little bit of stuff since I've been here last, and they should put on a pretty good show. It's always fun coming here and meeting all the people.
You know, it's one of those things, Rick, you could tell, you know, Chris Terry has been an All-Star multiple times. Matt Tarmina has been an All-Star multiple times. And it's a different experience from the guys who are just going for their first time. But you could see on their faces and even the other veteran All-Stars who had been at this event before that the specialness of the weekend is never lost on them. And the honor of being selected is never lost on them.
That's right. You know, they both played a very tough game against Manitoba at home in Laval on Saturday night, found their way to Utica the next day, and then had to participate right away in the skills competition. And you know, with Terry just coming back from an injury, but yet he was ready to go. And you think about, well, in fact, it was the commissioner, Dave Andrews, made special mention of Chris Terry in his news conference, referring to the year prior when at the very last minute when Chris Terry was off on his way for his All-Star break plans, they contacted him and asked him to fill in, and he said absolutely. And you can, as we talked to them multiple times, both Chris and Matt reinforced how special it is, how much of an honor it is. No one knows how long your hockey career, as we've said in previous shows, will last. And so they want to drink in these moments and embrace them and appreciate them every time they come around. And it's also an opportunity for them to reacquaint themselves with guys that they know from around the league, either former teammates or friends, and in a much lighter atmosphere. And both of them seem to enjoy themselves immensely.
Well, we actually asked both Chris and Matt exactly about that. It kind of in jest. At first saying, you know, a lot of these guys that you're on a team with now in the North Division and in the Eastern Conference are guys that, you know, maybe you had some jostling with or some pretty good chirping on the ice with, you know, a week or two ago. And then you come together and it's a completely different atmosphere. And they both laughed at that and smiled and said, well, yeah, that's kind of all part and parcel to being a professional on the ice, but just being, you know, human beings and friends and colleagues off the ice. And both of them had some things to say about that. I'll start with Matt Tarmina and his reaction to that, and then move on to Chris Terry's comments on this topic.
It's good to see everybody's personality and how they are off the ice, because when you are on the ice, it's a completely different atmosphere. So, you know, just going out there and, you know, talking with some of these people here, and I've got to know quite a few guys over the years, and it's a good group, and it's always a good time when we come here.
The guys I met that, you know, I hadn't known before, and guys I haven't seen in a while, and catching up with them, you know, having a teammate here and sharing that with him is pretty special, and just the whole weekend's been a lot of fun, from where we're staying and the things that we're doing, and the skills was fun yesterday, and pretty entertaining way to go out today. So,
consensus is it really is, you know, the one word that both of them repeated quite often throughout the weekend of the biggest thing that they take away from this kind of event is the camaraderie. They both use that word individually on more than one occasion. And it really does, Rick, illustrate the camaraderie, the brotherhood that being a hockey player is, that transcends whatever team you're on, whether you've been teammates before or not, and whether or not you even really know another player or have ever met them before. There's an instant bond there, and they really get to celebrate that on a weekend like this.
Yeah, for sure. As we said before, hockey is a very small community, and knowing people and getting to spend time with them, meeting new people is for the players is it's a real treat for them, and even for us to, other than Manitoba, to see the players in the West. That other than, right to the end of the season, you wouldn't necessarily get to see the talent that they have over there. Dylan Strome, Nick Merkley, and the characters like Anders Lindback was just a delight all weekend. It's a real fun event.
It really is. And just to, if you go to AHL.report, you can see a full story breakdown of exactly what went down in the skills competition and then in the 3-on-3 tournament style All-Star Challenge. But so we won't go through all of those details, but let's just touch briefly, starting with the skills competition, Rick. It's always the glass is down for anyone who's not attended a skills competition before. It's the same on the NHL level as well. The glass is down. So the access to the fans is really up close and personal. And fans can chit chat with players. They can get autographs. The kids go crazy. But you also see the guys just all gathered together and just having a lot of fun watching one another. And here's what both Matt and Chris had to say about the skills competition in general.
Oh yeah, it's always a lot of fun. You get to see some skills from guys that you haven't seen before. You also see some things that you didn't expect from some people. And now when you play against them, you'll know how fast they are or how hard their shot is or how skilled they are.
Just a lot of jokes and a lot of fun, just the camaraderie and, cheering each other on and really watching some really talented, probably future NHLers out on the ice.
I joked with Tarmina after he made the comment about, oh, now I know how hard you shoot or how fast you can skate. I jokingly said, oh, so this works as a scouting mission for you as well. But, it's one of those things, Rick, where you watch these guys watching each event happen. And for a minute, despite the talent that you see on the ice, for a minute, you almost forget that they're pro hockey players, pro athletes. And they just look again, like guys who just really enjoy hockey and really appreciate watching other guys who play the sport very well. And that's really fun to see.
And the fans appreciate them too. The fans are there probably first and foremost, mostly Utica fans, although we saw plenty of jerseys of other teams. So the Utica fans are there to cheer on the Thatcher Demkos and Reed Bouchers. But also, because there's a fair bit of movement in the AHL, they've been exposed to players from other teams. And Matt Tarmina mentioned that, he's having played in with Syracuse, and he's got a bit of a fan club in
sure.
the area. And you saw fans lining up at the after the skills at the boards to collect autographs from. All the players, each one was busy doing autographs after the skills competition. So No, it's just a wonderful fan event. And let's say, you know, in the skills competition, it wasn't all fun. Both Chris Terry and Matt Terramina did pretty darn well. Chris Terry in the he was in the puck control relay and beat out TJ Tynan, and then he was a co-winner in the accuracy shooting with Chris Bork.
Of course, Matt Terramina was quick to attest the fact that Matt Terramina was one of the passers in that. And so, of course, Matt made sure to sit. Well, he didn't miss any of the shots that I passed to him. So always good to have a teammate putting the puck on your stick.
And Matt Terramina was in the rapid fire and went, I think, 3-for-5 in that. Against Antoine Bebo, and he that looked great too.
It really did. They seem to have a lot of fun, and equally so, the All-Star Challenge, which is what they call the 3-on-3 round robin tournament for the quote unquote All-Star game the following night, where each division plays against the other divisions in 10-minute 3-on-3 mini games, and then the two teams who have the winningest record after that play in a 6-minute championship game. And wouldn't you know it, Chris Terry and Matt Terramina, part of the North Division team, were on the championship team. And Rick, it was the final game to determine who was going to play against the Pacific Division was the North Division against the Atlantic Division. And the Atlantic Division in the past has usually been pretty competitive. And the North Division found themselves down 3-0, I think, with just 3 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Mounted a huge 4 unanswered goal comeback to win it with seconds left. I mean, it was the place, the roof almost came off the place. It was an incredible thing to watch.
And the format is there was 6 kind of round robin games where each team each division played each other, and it was a 10-minute long game, 3-on-3, the early games, you know, it was kind of fun and pick up and maybe feeling each other out, but nobody wanted to. I think nobody wanted to compete too hard, kind of.
Right.
You don't want to show anybody up. You don't want to.
Right.
But that game 6, the last game of the round robin, was intense, absolutely intense. And as you said, Atlantic was up by 3 goals with 3 minutes to go, and then this huge comeback from the North to earn their berth into the championship. Against the Pacific, and that game was terrific as well. It ended 1-0, but back and forth. And that the championship game was a 6-minute long game, but just absolutely intense. Very enjoyable to watch.
It was very enjoyable. This is what Chris Terry had to say when we asked him what that comeback in game 6 felt like out there on the ice.
Yeah, that was fun. That was pretty cool to watch. I mean, just started with one, and then we got the goalie out and a couple more, and I don't know, kind of carried over into the championship game for us. So it was a lot of fun.
And you can hear the laughter in his voice, the excitement in his voice. The whole bench went nuts. As he said, they got one goal. They pulled Thatcher Demko for, I believe, the next 2 goals against. So it was 4-on-3 for goals 2 and 3, and then back to the 3-on-3, and they managed to put the puck in the back of the net. I want to say with less than 30 seconds left to win it. Just really enjoyable hockey for a game that doesn't make a lick of difference in the standings or anything like that, for an evening, to watch that competitiveness come out and the excitement of the open ice of 3-on-3 hockey. There's lots of goals. There's, The goaltenders were on full display with plenty of, you know, double pad stacks and sweeping windmills and all sorts of showmanship. It was extremely fun to watch, and I certainly hope folks were able to catch the national television broadcasts.
And in that game six, the winning goal, it was announced as the game winning goal to Matt Taormina. He told us later he didn't. It wasn't his goal, but he was at least credited with the winning goal. And when it happened, as you said, Thatcher Demko was in the backup, and they had split the game. Was Linus Ullmark, and I've never seen a backup goalie go all the way down in front of the players, all the way down the bench doing a high five.
That's right.
I mean, these players were. I think they come into this thinking, okay, we'll do this and it'll be fun. But then they get competitive and then it gets really fun. And we, you know, both Matt Taormina and Chris Terry were both just beaming after the championship game.
Absolutely. Well, and Linus Ullmark, once they won the championship, he comes off the bench and throws his gloves and his mask in the air on the ice and piles on Thatcher Demko. And, it was quite something. And I should note as well, as you say, Matt Taormina was credited with that final goal. He scored the first goal of the entire round robin tournament. In the first game, he was the one that got the scoring started overall on the night. So
yeah.
Pretty good night for both Chris Terry and Matt Taormina. We of course, thank them sincerely for being generous with their time, with us and patience with us. You know, it's, when you go to the All-Star game and you've got media that are covering just one particular team, you get lots of coverage from those folks. So between interviews and videos with them and photographs with them, they were great with us as the guys always are every year. And we thank them, and we thank the team at Utica for putting on such a great event.
Absolutely. And the folks at the AHL who were very, very helpful to us, very gracious, very, made sure we had all we needed. And I had a great spot for both events, kind of right next to the goal judge, right up against the glass. So it was a prime view for both.
Absolutely. Big thanks to President Dave Andrews and of course Jason and Hannah in the communications department for all of their work. I'm sure anyone that's done major event planning knows that behind the scenes things are likely chaotic from sunup till sundown, pulling off major events like this, but you would never know that from the outside looking in. Everything ran very seamlessly, very smoothly. Hospitality was great. And just couldn't ask for a better experience yet again. It's one of our favorite events to cover every year, and we look forward to next year, wherever it may be. No announcement on that yet. Dave Andrews did say that there's at least three teams who are interested in hosting next year. So we'll have to wait to see where that's going to be. Speaking of, as we transition kind of over to AHL news, we'll kind of stay on the All-Star weekend just for a moment, just to talk briefly about Dave Andrews' State of the League address, which was a press conference he gave Monday morning before the All-Star Challenge, which we attended. And Rick, we certainly don't need to go through everything that Mr. Andrews covered, but there were some things of interest that he did mention. One of the things that I was really pleased to hear that he sort of started with was that, we're about halfway through the AHL season, maybe perhaps a little bit more than that. And right now, percentage-wise, attendance is up across the league, which is a great indication for people really getting on board with American League level hockey and being a development lead feeding into their favorite NHL team. So I was very pleased to hear that attendance is up.
Yeah, for sure. And some of that is been boosted by the additions of Belleville and Laval. But even when you take those numbers out of it, there was overall the league is up in attendance.
Which is fantastic. You know, he also touched on the fact that, you know, when speaking about teams like Laval and Belleville, that there is this shift in the trend of, as he says, quote unquote, stabilizing the league, meaning bringing the geography of an AHL team closer to that of its NHL team, and sustaining, you know, a high quality in play at the NHL level means having an investment in the NHL's development teams. And so senior management wants to see their teams more on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, and not have them so far apart. He did mention that there are no relocation plans for next year as of right now. So things, it sounds like, should stay pretty status quo across the league. But Rick, we will be moving to 31 teams in the league next year.
That's right. No movement, but just an expansion to 31 teams. Colorado will move from the ECHL, the Colorado Eagles, and there'll be some realignment that happens as a result of that to balance the conferences. But the overall stability is what they're looking for the time being. And he said that the next time that they would look to add a team would come with NHL expansion, which looks like it could be happening in Seattle.
Correct. One item that he touched on, which I thought was a really really kind of interesting statistic, was player movement so far this season. Across the league so far, there have been 479 NHL recalls of AHL players, for 479 recalls of 275 players across the league. And just under 60 players have made their NHL debut this year. That's quite a, you know, and he said that's right around where it is every year. But when you think about that from a league perspective, you know, when you focus on one team, sure, you know, you have a dozen or more call-ups throughout the year. But when you think about that for every team across the league, that's a lot of players who are getting their shot at the NHL level. He mentioned that man games in the NHL by AHL recalls so far, I believe last year, were about 6,400 man games in the NHL. So that he was said, you know, averaging about five or more players, AHL players, per game in NHL games. And that's, again, it's just all a testament to how important the AHL really is to the development of players and what that means at the NHL level for rounding out rosters, filling in for injuries, and providing the future for NHL franchises.
I think it bears repeating, because that last number was the one that kind of impacted me, that in any typical NHL game, you're going to have five players who are on recall from the AHL playing in that game. That's when you stop and think of it, you really then the impact of the AHL and the development model that the role that they play has a huge impact on the NHL and their parent teams.
Absolutely. The only other thing, and feel free to jump in if there was anything else besides this that really stood out to you in Dave Andrews' address, but the other thing of note is that the collective bargaining agreement expires in September of 2019, so negotiations will start later on this summer as they prepare for that final year before the CBA expires, and so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of those negotiations as well.
The only thing I'll add to that is refereeing. We know most AHL games have two referees, although there are still games, and we've been at some of them, that have one referee.
<plenty. laughs>
he mentioned that by next year, all games will have two referees.
which is fantastic. It's really, you know, folks might think, well, okay, that makes sense, but is it a really big deal? It is, and it really affects players. You know, when there's only one referee on the ice, he can't see the whole ice at the same time. And you know, we've had instances covering Montreal's AHL affiliate where goal calls are called incorrectly, penalties get missed, and it can affect the outcome of a game. It really can. And so having two referees is really at every single game for every single team is going to really make a big difference. So I was pleased to hear that as well. The other thing that Dave Andrews mentioned, that if anyone was watching the broadcast on Monday night would have seen, is that the AHL joined in the NHL's Hockey Fights Cancer initiative. Now, granted, that for the NHL, that happens throughout the month of November. The American League decided to join this initiative for the All-Star Challenge on Monday night. And so funds that were collected throughout the weekend are going to be donated to Hockey Fights Cancer. There was a moment during the All-Star Challenge where just about everyone in the crowd and every coach, every player were holding up a purple "I fight for" and they fill in the blank sign. And it was a really powerful moment, Rick, to see the entire rink stop in the middle of this celebration of the All-Stars and just for a moment focus on Hockey Fights Cancer and this terrible disease, and to see how supportive and enthusiastic the players were about supporting the initiative as well.
Yeah, and as you said, players, coaches, officials,
mascots,
media, yeah, everybody was, and yeah, the mascots. We should mention that mascots from many of the AHL teams traveled there, and so the building was filled with mascots. But this moment was where everybody kind of came together as one and said, "We stand together. We fight cancer." You know, they many of the AHL officials were wearing the Hockey Fights Cancer tie, the purple tie. Mm-hmm. They had very attractive lapel pins. They had for a giveaway of some kind, the lavender sticks, CCM sticks, which were,
yeah,
they looked fabulous.
They did.
Yeah, it was a really kind of special moment, and I hope that came through on TV for those watching.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's nice to see the American League adding to this initiative by the NHL, and again, it's one of those things where the NHL and the AHL are really taking steps forward to work together as two governing organizations for two very important leagues in hockey. And from a player perspective, we actually asked Matt Termina and Chris Terry what they thought of the Hockey Fights Cancer initiative being pulled into the All-Star weekend, and this is what they had to say.
Oh, yeah. It's always a lot of fun. You get to see some...
That is not the right clip. Let's try the right clip this time.
Yeah, it can happen to anybody, and I'm sure everybody knows somebody that's been battling something. So that's huge, and anytime they can try to, you know, help donate money or trying to find a cure for all this stuff, it's great. And I think just getting that out there, especially with everything that's going on with our league and stuff, it's good. And I think that it's just going to help the cause even more.
I think it's great. I think you know, the NHL is a bigger stage and platform to you know, have that initiative on, and I think the American League continues to grow. I mean, going to 31 teams next year, and just to have all those teams involved and the league involved, I think obviously it's you know, a terrible disease, and majority of people I think are if not personally touched by it, you know someone or somehow connected to it. So I think it's really easy to get behind, and for us as players, and I think as fans too. I think it's I think it's great. I think it when you wear those colors and when I think fans have the opportunity to, you know, not just see us as players, but, you know, to maybe have that connection to people that we know too, and I think that goes a long way, and I think it's a really great thing the league's doing.
You could really hear there, Rick, you know, everyone is familiar with canned answers in media interviews, and neither one of those two players gave a canned answer to that question. They both very heartfelt replies and responses to this initiative, which goes a long way towards showing how important things like this are to these players.
No, both gave very thoughtful answers, and you know, players are asked to do all kinds of things outside of hockey, and it's sometimes it's perfunctory. They go through the motions of you know, signing autographs or signing things for charity, but this was very meaningful and something that hit home with them and that they really wanted to say something about, and I think it was that way for not only Chris and Matt, but for every player there.
Absolutely. So it was a very successful All-Star weekend. We certainly hope all of you at home were able to follow along or watch on TV as well. And of course, as I mentioned, be sure to head over to AHL.report. Check out our recaps from both days. It includes the full interview audio from all of the interviews that we did with both Chris and Matt. We interviewed them before each event and after each event. There's some video clips from Rick that he took on there as well. And head over to the AHL Report's Twitter timeline. Lots of information there and some pretty unique photographs and videos and whatnot of things that happened throughout the weekend. So lots of fun. And now it's back to business with regular hockey this week. Before we head over to the top five, there's just two quick little news notes that I would like to just quickly touch on because I think they're worth noting. Michael Hutchinson was one of the goaltenders at the AHL All-Star Classic this weekend, and he actually asked to he was slated to start for the Jets last night. For the Winnipeg Jets last night. And there was some concern apparently about, oh, well, you know, should you really go to the All-Star weekend? Can you get back in time and be ready to play in an NHL game the next night? After, you know, the day after you get back and whatnot, he said, I really want to be there. So he went to the All-Star Challenge, did fantastically, looked great, gets back on a plane, goes and plays in his 100th NHL game. And won. So I think
and didn't just beat anybody.
No, he didn't. It was not
the
lowly
Lightning.
Greg. Yeah. And it was a 3-1 win, I believe. Pretty resounding win. So congratulations to him. You know, it's been a tough year for him. Eric Comrie has kind of jumped over him, playing up with the Jets here and there. And I believe it had been 10 months since the last time he had played in an NHL game, but the All-Star game, as he mentioned in an article I saw, he said something to the effect of getting selected to play in an All-Star weekend doesn't happen every year and you don't ever know if it's ever going to happen again. And I didn't want to miss this opportunity. And I knew I could still be ready for an NHL game the next night. And sure enough, I mean, he walked the walk and talked the talk. So kudos to him. Congratulations to him on having quite a whirlwind weekend, but a pretty good one. The other thing that I wanted to make note of, the Laval Rocket does not face the Rochester Americans anytime soon. And I know that we have, spoken in the past about how Brian Gionta, who is captaining the U.S. men's Olympic hockey team, has been skating with the Amerks, just as a, you know, kind of get himself some on-ice training and whatnot before he heads to the Olympics. Well, today, the Rochester Americans signed Giunta to a PTO. He is going to be in the lineup on Friday when the Amerks host the Marlies in Rochester. So it sounds like probably from now until he heads over to Pyeongchang that he's going to be on the Amerks roster as a little bit of a tune-up for the Olympics. So if anyone has a chance to see any of the Rochester American games on AHL Live, you might want to tune in if you miss seeing Brian Giunta playing hockey.
And then watch him in the Olympics playing for
and then watch
in
him
USA.
In the Olympics. That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Good for Brian.
Yeah, that should be fun for him. And I imagine it'll be pretty fun for the Amerks as well to have a guy of Giunta's talent level and skill and experience on the bench during games. So that should be pretty fun. And good on Rochester for really making that partnership work. Something that teams could consider moving forward. Well, I guess that brings us, Rick, to our top five segment. And our top five is we're going to do it a little differently this week. It's not necessarily a top five countdown like we do traditionally, because we're going to talk just about some fun facts and tidbits about Groundhog Day, because it's just such a unique holiday. It's happening this Friday, February 2nd. So it's not necessarily a top five. It's just kind of some fun facts and tidbits that both Rick and I have each separately decided that we want to touch on, because there's actually a lot more to say about Groundhog Day than you probably ever really considered. So since this isn't a traditional, top five countdown, do you have rules and regulations and disclaimers and things of that nature, or are you pretty straightforward today?
No, I have rules. I have rules and exclusions.
Oh, well,
I didn't want to disappoint
why
you.
Why am I not surprised?
I didn't want to disappoint you.
No, of course not. what rules and exclusions on the day of the rodent do you have?
Well, here's the deal. If we're going to talk about the rodent, it better be a rodent.
Oh, really? Oh, we're going to go there. We're going to get nitpicky.
Well, it's not nitpicky. So we're going to talk about, the more famous ones, but there's all kinds of places where I don't know what kind of sense has prevailed, and they've decided not to have a groundhog or woodchuck, whatever you want to call them. They decided not to have the rodent. So in Alberta, for example, they have Balzac Billy.
I'm sorry, what? this is a G-rated show,
Balzac, Alberta is a place. In Ottawa, they have Ollie. And both Billy and Ollie are just people in groundhog costumes. And they run through the...
Oh, come on, you can't do that.
Yeah, the prediction thing. So we're not going to talk about... And there's Manitoba Merv. Manitoba Merv is a hand puppet.
That just doesn't even sound right.
No, it doesn't.
No.
He's a hand puppet.
That's
so
bad.
So my rules and exclusions are, if we're going to talk about you today, you have to actually be the rodent.
Yes. I agree. I fully stand behind this rule and exclusion.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Fabulous. So what's your first tidbit that you'd like to throw out there about
well,
this?
Well, I think
fabulous
just to, yeah, just to get people into it, we do the obvious thing, and we should talk about the most famous of all. And yes, it happens on February 2nd and every year, and that the prediction is if the groundhog sees its shadow, 6 more weeks
of winter.
Yeah. And the most famous groundhog of them all is Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right.
In Punxsutawney Phil, Pennsylvania.
Correct. Which is on the western side of the state. It's out near Pittsburgh. And actually, this is Groundhog's Day has been happening since 1887. But Phil doesn't actually make his prediction from the town of Punxsutawney proper. It actually happens in a little place called Gobbler's Knob. No commenting from the peanut gallery, which is 2 miles south, which is 2 miles southeast of town. So it's just outside of town where Phil comes out and makes his prediction.
And last year, Phil saw his shadow.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
He did.
So
actually, go ahead.
So predicted 6 more weeks of winter last year.
He did. And as of last year, he has Punxsutawney Phil has made 130 predictions. And he's predicted an early spring 18 times out of those 130 predictions. So that doesn't happen very often. Doesn't happen very often. As of 2016, an organization called StormFacts says that the predictions have been correct 39% of the time. So, you know. But there's a group
Of Scranton. University of Scranton says Phil's been right 8% of the time.
Well, the University of Scranton doesn't know what they're talking about. There is a group called the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club Inner Circle. And you can determine who are members of the Inner Circle because they're the ones who wear the top hats and the tuxedos on Groundhog's Day. They're the ones who take care of Phil throughout the rest of the year. They're his handlers. He has a residence in a special enclosure at the Punxsutawney Town Library, and the Inner Circle takes care of him there. And the Inner Circle maintains that Punxsutawney Phil is correct in his prognostication 100% of the time.
Of course they do.
And they purport
Lion librarians right there
that it is only by human error of the president's translation of Phil's groundhog ease language communication that the prediction could ever be construed as anything less than 100%. So get this. Okay, so February 2nd at daybreak, Punxsutawney Phil awakens from his burrow up there on Gobbler's Knob. He's helped up to the top of the stump by his handlers from the Inner Circle, and he explains in a language known as groundhog ease only to the president of the Inner Circle, who is the only person who actually can understand groundhoggies through his possession of an ancient acacia wooden cane that the president possesses. Phil gives his prediction to the president, and the president interprets Phil's message in groundhoggies and then directs the vice president to read the proper one of two scrolls that have been prepared, one for shadow, one for no shadow. And the vice president then reads the scrolls to the anxiously waiting crowd who has gathered on Gobbler's Knob. You didn't know it was so formal, did you?
No, I didn't.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
And Phil has lived how long?
The average age of a woodchuck in the wild is 6 years.
but there's some, I should have done the research on it, but there's some kind of elixir that they give Punxsutawney Phil, some kind of juice that they said there's only been one in the 100 and some
years.
Well, yes,
there's only
been one Phil.
It is claimed that this one groundhog has lived to make weather prognostications since 1886. sustained by drinks of groundhog punch elixir of life, which is administered at the annual groundhog picnic in the fall. And so in this respect, Punxsutawney Phil is unique because the lifespan of a normal groundhog is roughly 6 years. But because he gets the elixir of life every fall at the groundhog picnic, which no other groundhogs seem to attend and get their little snouts into the elixir of life, he gets to live basically forever predicting weather for all of us humans.
What about the people that want to head down to the library to get some of this live forever juice?
I think it only works on woodchucks. I don't know that they have a Homo sapien version of the elixir of life. I think it's only appropriate for woodchuck physiology.
Okay.
So, I think that covered each of our first three tidbits on Groundhog Day. Did you ever imagine that you would listen to a hockey podcast and learn so much about Groundhog Day? I should note one of my tidbits. I live in Pennsylvania. I have not yet been to Punxsutawney for Groundhog's Day weekend, but it is on my bucket list because I've heard it is actually a raucous amount of fun and people come from all over the place and they just overrun this tiny little Pennsylvania town. And I just think it would be quite a cultural experience, I think.
Now, Phil is the most famous of all, obviously.
He's the only one.
Well, no, there's even in the U.S., there's others. There's
They're imposters.
Staten Island Chuck.
Nothing good ever came from Staten Island. I'm sorry.
But the funny part about that is, or I found it amusing, is the New York City mayors over the years have been involved. And when Michael Bloomberg was mayor, he held up the Staten Island Chuck. The groundhog bit him, and it did. And he was like, "Okay, that's it. I'm done." And he never went back for the ceremony. Never got involved. So. When de Blasio became mayor in New York City, he said, okay, he was going to resurrect this thing with the mayor going. And he had these enormous, leather gloves. He looked idiotic with these big gloves to make sure he didn't get bit. And he dropped the groundhog and it died a short time later. Bill de Blasio killed the groundhog.
Where is PETA on this?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
where is
that's,
PETA on
the,
this?
PETA's involved in Balzac, Alberta, and that's why they have a guy dressed in a groundhog costume.
Okay.
I guess.
But see,
I don't know.
There you have perfect example of why Staten Island Chuck, if you're not Punxsutawney Phil, you're an imposter. Because obviously Staten Island Chuck doesn't have enough clout to have his own inner circle of actual handlers who actually know how to take care of him, who he is not going to bite. So stay out of the groundhog prognostication business.
Except there's an official Canadian groundhog, because the same predictions don't follow. We talked about last year that Phil saw his shadow 6 more weeks, but the official prognostication in Canada was Wyarton Willie, and Wyarton Willie predicted in early spring last year. And what makes Willie unique is that he's an albino. An albino groundhog, and actually the current Willie is Wyarton Willie IV. And at least in Canada, talk about magical elixirs.
You have no elixir of life in Canada?
No, we
well,
don't.
That's
we don't.
Well, that's
no.
just
the maple syrup, they tried it. It didn't work. So
that's pathetic.
Wyarton, this is the fourth Wyarton Willie, fourth albino.
Uh-huh.
And yes, he's the official. Now there's some others in Nova Scotia. We have Shubenectady Sam. there's Brandon Bob in Manitoba.
Oh my God.
There's just Gary.
Canada.
That's all they call him. Gary in Kleinburg, Ontario.
Okay.
And, of course, there's a new addition. Quebec's got in on it, and there's Fred LaMarmotte. I don't know why they call him Fred. Why they didn't
like, Fred Reek?
No, it's Fred. Some are Mark. Okay. But the most important, other than Sam in Nova Scotia, he gets to be the first on the continent to make the prediction because he's the Nova Scotia Times up. But the most famous and the most accurate, I guess, is Wired and Willie in Warrington, Ontario, and it's said that that Willie has been 37% correct over the years. He started back in 1956 it was his first prediction. So well after Phil, but he's got quite a strong following
There's where I have two problems with bless his little rodent heart, Wyerton Willie. First of all, actually three.
Albino heart.
You haven't been doing this as long as Phil, so you got some catching up to do. Secondly, of course he's going to predict an early spring. It's Canada, for God's sake. I mean, does he really want to go out there and say, oh, yeah, Manitoba, you got 6 more weeks of 80 feet of snow every day? No, they would run him out of town. So, of course, he's going to predict an early spring. I call a fix on that. And I'm sorry, without the elixir of light, you're on Wyerton Willie number 4. When I was 5, I had a parakeet. And I named it Tweety because I was 5 and I wasn't clever. And Tweety Bird was like the only bird that I knew. And right. every time it died, which was, you know, every 3 weeks when you own a parakeet, my mom would get a new one and I'd call it Tweety. And so by the time we got to Tweety 8, it finally she stopped replacing them. So you just can't keep replacing them.
Well, only 4 since 1956. That's not bad for woodchuck, you know.
I'm calling foul on that. There's no way you've only had 4 since 1956.
Albino ones at that. They're, you know, a little bit more fragile.
Right. Yes. They live to be like 80 and this is the oddest segment we've ever had on this show. to add to the oddity of this segment, so here's a random tidbit of mine for Groundhog Day. When I was in university, I was friends with a girl who is a resident of Pennsylvania. And she was the only person I had ever met who. Legitimately, her favorite holiday of the entire year was not Christmas, was not Thanksgiving, twas not Halloween, twas not the 4th of July. It was Groundhog Day. So much so that her parents, and I mean, I saw it with my very own eyes, every single year for February, she would get enormous boxes of gifts, wrapped gifts in the mail from her family and friends. All of her Groundhog Day gifts. Her grandfather carved her a groundhog, a Punxsutawney Phil, out of wood. She had groundhog everything. She was obsessed. And she got gifts on Groundhog's Day. She also played the flute in band, so take with that what you will.
Right.
She's a big Groundhog Day fan. I'm gonna pick a holiday that I decide is my favorite and see if I can start getting gifts for it.
You made me think of you mentioned about your university days. I had a university professor that did a whole lesson on this, and one of my favorite math professors. That you would come in and you would throw out the news of the day, and he would build a lesson on that. And
that is the laziest lesson planning I have ever heard of in my life.
No, it required some real skill. So on February 2nd, we went in. He said, well, "Okay, well, anybody got any news?" And somebody said Groundhog Day, and he wrote on the. I was impressed. He wrote on the blackboard Punxsutawney, which impressed me already that he got the spelling of Punxsutawney correct. And then he went into it was statistics and probability. And he went into how the probability of how it could possibly be correct or not, and that there was, you know, almost equal chance of it being sunny or cloudy that day, and random chance it would be one third being correct, and all that sort of thing. It was fascinating. For a math guy, it was fascinating.
I was just going to say, man, you math geeks really have to stretch to make a lesson interesting.
Yeah. But the best part of Groundhog Day
is
it has to be the movie.
Absolutely. It's Groundhog Day. How can you not love the movie? Bill Murray. It's a classic.
Well, any movie with Bill Murray. And not only Bill Murray wasn't the only Murray in that movie. His brother, Brian Doyle Murray, was in it as well. In the clip that the movie was written by Bill Murray and Harold Ramis, who are, you know, they did a number of movies together: Groundhog Day, mm-hmm. Stripes, Ghostbusters, whatever. But that clip you played at the beginning, that the radio DJs and doing the Sonny and Cher "I Got You Babe" thing. It was Harold Ramis and Brian Doyle Murray were the radio announcers. And then you later see Brian Doyle Murray in the movie in the top hat as one of the
Inner Circle guys.
Buster in the movie. Yeah, that's right. It's saying, I'm making the announcement about Phil being the seer of seers, sage of sages, prognosticator of prognosticators.
That's right.
Yeah, I've seen the movie a few times.
Just a few. Well, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, at Christmas time, there are Christmas movies that you have to watch. At Halloween, you know, everyone should be watching it's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, or, you know, your favorite Halloween flick, Hocus Pocus, or whatever it is. And every February 2nd, you should be watching Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's essentially, in a nutshell, Bill Murray is a television reporter. He's a very cynical, jaded TV news reporter, and he heads out to Punxsutawney from Pittsburgh, and he heads out to Punxsutawney because everybody from Pittsburgh. Well, no, maybe we have listeners from Pittsburgh, so I won't speak ill of Pittsburgh. He heads out to Punxsutawney for the coverage of the event, and while he is there, he goes through the whole day and has all sorts of mishaps and adventures and whatnot. And he goes to sleep and he wakes up the next morning and he relives it. Suddenly it's Groundhog's Day again. And for whatever reason, he is stuck in this endless loop where he has to relive Groundhog Day every single day. And in Bill Murray fashion, it's absolutely hilarious. One of my favorite quotes, is when he's with a couple of the locals. And of course, none of the locals realize that he's reliving every day, but he's learning a little bit about everybody each day. And he says, "I was in the Virgin Islands once. I met a girl. We ate lobster, drank pina coladas. At sunset, we made love like sea otters. That was a pretty good day. Why couldn't I get that day over and over and over?" Instead, he's stuck out in Punxsutawney in the middle of the snow. And no, it's a tremendous movie. It really is, and it's filled with quite a lot of memorable scenes and memorable moments.
And now he was driving around
with the groundhog,
car with two locals. He was, first of all,
Ralph and Gus. Yeah.
Gus. Gus was Rick Dukeman was kind of a stand-up guy from Saskatchewan. And he was in this, and I've seen this movie 1,000 times, and I've seen Hunt for Red October. And Rick Dukeman was in that as well, where he was in the helicopter talking about how many times he puked the last time they were out.
That's right.
Yeah. But no, there was all kinds of interesting, the my favorite moment is kind of where, Bill Murray, who's Phil Connors. Phil Connors steps off the curb every day, and every day into the slushy puddle. And yeah, it goes in up to his ankles, and it's the insurance salesman.
Ned Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson plays by one of my favorite, Stephen Tobolowsky. There was some great moments.
That first
great
step is a
that.
Doozy.
That's right. That's right.
So put it on your to-do list this weekend when you're not watching hockey. Be sure to watch Groundhog's Day. Thanks for indulging us on a little bit of just a different kind of top five for a very unique holiday. Give us a shout on Twitter, and I'm sure that some of you have some stories surrounding either this holiday or one of the many prognosticating groundhogs that are out there. So we'd love to hear your stories as well. Be sure to tweet us at the AHL Report. And that's actually all we have time for today, Rick. We packed a lot in there. We'll be back on our regular day, Tuesday next week. We did have a different day just because of the travel with the All-Star game this week. But I greatly look forward to next Tuesday's show after my Philadelphia Eagles will be visiting your Minnesota Vikings stadium, where they have nicely laid out the Eagles logo in one of the end zones. And hopefully... All I have to say is I know all of you hate Tom Brady as much as I do, so I expect full bandwagon fans for the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend. We need a huge day on Sunday. I have to say, from the press box, we'll air on its regularly scheduled day next week, next Tuesday, only if there is not a Super Bowl parade for me to go to in Philadelphia Tuesday. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening. We certainly enjoy catching you up every week on all of the happenings around the league and with your Rocket Laval AHL franchise. Be sure to hit us up on Twitter at the AHL Report. You can find Rick at All Habs, and you can find me at Flyers Rule. And of course, be sure to check out all of the other podcasts on Rocket Sports Radio. That includes Habs Unfiltered with Blaine and Treg, Hab a Listen with Lewis and Gibby, which be sure to check out their episode from last week. I did make a guest appearance on the show and talked a little bit about the Laval Rocket in terms of its relationship and some of the players with the Montreal Canadiens franchise. And of course, Rick and Chris G co-host the Habs 360 live podcast every Saturday afternoon at 2:00. So be sure to tune in for that as well. Rick,
and
thanks so much.
Just this week only, programming note, will be at 11, given that the Canadians are playing a matinee. Mm. So that's an 11:00 Habs 360 podcast on Saturday.
Good information right there. Thanks so much for tuning in, Rick. It's been a blast. Thanks for joining me again. And
always glad to be here, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Fly, Eagles, fly.